to go back in time because they are opening the archives to look at old shows, old movies, old pop culture things to see if they stand the test of time. This is Rewind with your hosts, Brian Austin Green and Pete Ferrero.
All right, man.
Here we are.
Back
again. We're back for episode two of Rewind.
It took a minute to get
here. We are back at Numero Uno Tavern.
I love it here.
This place is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the food, the drinks, I mean,
the environment, the social aspect of it, all the people.
Like, I'm up in this area now, so it's going to probably be my hangout.
So can we talk about that really
sure,
fast?
Sure, of course,
which I'm sure most people know at this point, Pete was one of the unfortunate people living in Altadena who lost his home in the fires. And so I remember sitting with him after that, and we were talking about it because it's a substantial loss. I can't even imagine going through the emotional loss of everything. Because it's as much as it's like, oh, it's stuff.
It still
it's
like, was.
It's your stuff.
Yeah, it was.
It's your life up until that point. It's all the things you've collected, all the things you've done, all the things you've seen, and
cool,
there are all these like little mementos.
Yeah.
It's these little reminders of your life. But then I remember we had a kind of a sit down conversation about
it. Dude, it was very important to me.
And it was like, I remember the moment when you had that shift of, okay, it's this moment is all about how I view it. And what I do from this point forward, because this, the things that you lost and the life you had, it no longer exists. So no matter how much you mourn, it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, are you going to instead look at this as like turning over a new leaf? I get to do new things.
Dude, I'm
stoked by
that.
I get to meet new people.
Yeah.
And now, so now you're living literally like three blocks away from here. You went from Altadena to now you're out here like, you know, Woodland Hills, Calabasas, Belkin. You're right around the corner from
me. Dude, it's wild. And like that conversation we had was the most helpful because I literally shifted my mindset from like the grief to like, wait, how often in life do you get a chance to like begin again? You know what I mean? And like forced, literally, like, because you might carry some old shit if you were beginning again and it's still there, but like I get a chance to begin again in a new area, and dude, it was you that really fucking got me going. You know.
Well, thank you, but no, I actually don't want to take credit for that. I think the universe. We've talked about that before. The universe does these things, and it forces your hand sometimes, and it forces itself to be the catalyst that you need.
Right.
To make the changes that you need.
Totally.
And sometimes it's painful and it hurts. And while you're in it, you're going, oh my God, like this is what good is going to come out of this. But then the more you kind of sit back and I always tell people, try and find the silver lining in everything that happens in life. Because when you do, it becomes that mind shift, that switch. And all of a sudden it changes your purpose for what it is you're going through. And you start, instead of missing things and falling into that like kind of depression and that loss, it creates that excitement for what's to come.
Totally. And also, you know, when I think about, I mean, obviously I think about all my people that lived on my block, you know what I mean? And everything that they've gone through. And the community that I lived in Altadena was super amazing, and I'm excited because I know that that community will rebuild again. People have this thing where they're like, oh, why me, why me? And it's like, for me, I'm looking at why me like as maybe I can either be a light for Altadena, a light for my community, a light for positivity, a light for all of it, and I'm excited by that.
You had a lot of people too reach out to you
after...
When you and your wife were staying in a hotel, saying how much you meant to them,
blew me away,
and what amazingly positive things you had done, and it's like you bring things up to me all the time, and it's because it's just kind of second nature for me. Like you don't think about those things. Like it just is who you are innately.
Yeah, it's so.
And then
true.
Somebody points them out, and you go, oh my God, I never thought about that.
I mean, it was, it blew me away. And like everyone's kindness, like totally outweighed the darkness. And like, then I hung out with you and there was this like monumental shift, like a game changing shift of just like, I'm excited to get back into doing things, like to talk about the Breakfast Club. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which is why we're here.
yeah. Welcome again to Rewind.
Yeah.
And today we're talking about the Breakfast Club, which I'm stoked on. I was always a massive fan of this film.
Always a fan, and I was totally obsessed as a kid with Molly Ringwald.
Were you?
This was Molly Ringwald. Like, in that era, Molly Ringwald was the shit.
16 Candles.
Pretty in Pink.
Oh, yeah, Pretty in Pink.
It was aesthetic. Yeah. The whole Molly Ringwald attitude.
She was king
aesthetic.
Of the world.
Yeah.
And I've now met her a few times, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah,
she's cool.
There's definitely that part of me that is like, oh my God, it's
fucking Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, you were like king of the world when I was younger. Like you,
And so what's interesting about this movie is this was one of the movies when I told people that we're doing this show, that people were like, it doesn't hold up anymore. And when they said that to me, I was like, wait, what are you talking about? It's The Breakfast Club. Now, of course, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years, whatever it could be. You know what I mean? It's not like one of those go-to movies that I might watch, like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles every Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? But Breakfast Club's not one of those movies.
Okay.
So I was like, what doesn't hold up? And he was like, well, the gay slurs. And I was like, what gay slurs? And then I watched this again last night. And there are definitely some things where I'm like, whoa.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like, could not.
Yeah. No, would never fly now. You could never make that movie now.
No.
But, so, yes. There were a lot of things. There was just a lot of sort of current slang and things that, you know, like saying totally and it just, they're all in you. Like, Emilio Estevez, something. Like, it was just so, like, 80s.
Totally.
But one of the things that I genuinely feel holds up with that movie is the emotion of it. It's so well crafted, and the performances are phenomenal all the way through. There wasn't one performance.
No.
Even the janitor, he's great.
Yeah.
He's great. Like, it's... And can I give props to Ali Sheedy?
Oh my God.
So good.
Yeah.
And Judd Nelson. So good. But all of them.
The casting of
Anthony Michael Hall.
Like,
all
I was
of
trying
them.
To think, like,
so
was
good.
There a teenage drama film like this? I mean, that was the era of the Brat Pack, and that was the era that was starting to happen, right?
So, yeah.
That group was the initial generation of actors.
John Hughes was the catalyst.
Of the movies that, like, Ferris Bueller's.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, these were things that were happening to us, or we were, or a little bit older, group of people that were a little bit older than us, and we were watching it in real time play out to them.
Right.
You know, and so the couple things. When the person said, oh, it doesn't hold up, I thought about that, and I was like, well, but in a way, it does.
Yeah.
Because it's indicative.
I don't think hold up is the right word. Like,
it's indicative of the time.
To say it doesn't hold up is like, it's like, what do you mean hold up?
Yeah.
Like, are you saying that a lot of the dialogue isn't relevant anymore? Because that's absolutely true.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that it doesn't hold up as a movie.
Exactly.
Like, there are certain things you watch and you go, oh, it was really cute and funny when I'm younger, but now as a film, it's just a garbage film. This, to me, is not one of those.
We'll get into the whole thing, but there's a scene where Judd Nelson is under the table and is, like, looking at Molly Ringwald's...
Yeah, upper skirt.
Yeah, upper skirt. And I was like, okay... Maybe that's too far. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's too much. Maybe now a younger generation would be like, oh, that's sexual harassment. That was I don't know. But
sure.
In the era of when we were growing up, it's fucking hilarious.
It wasn't.
And
It wasn't considered sexual harassment
then.
Her response to it was great. Like, that everybody else was laughing because he walks out with the toilet seat cover hanging out. You know, you mess with the bull, you get the horns. And he's walking out, and he's got the paper hanging out the back of his pants. Right. You know, what was that ruckus? He comes in and the whole thing. What ruckus, sir? I don't know. Yeah. Was that the ruckus here? They're all coughing.
Dude, and he's the principal. Oh, he was so in the last good thing we covered, the Dry Hard.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he was the FBI.
So
he was
good in this movie. Like, so good. He is, I mean, okay. And I remember guys like him when I went to school. Like, I remember principals and whatnot, or people like that who were just, like, I remember there's that one scene where he's like, I make $31,000 a year.
A year.
Right. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And I'm not going to throw it away for the, yeah. Yeah. So what was really, what John Hughes had, what he did incredibly well, aside from directing and working with kids and really bringing out the best, was crafting a story that was fully, fully fleshed out. Like the scene between Carl, who was the janitor, and the principal, where he's talking about, oh, the kids these days, that they just, you know, I've been a principal for 20 years now, and the kids are just getting, you know, tougher and tougher to, and Carl says to him, oh, the kids haven't changed, you're the one that's changed.
Yeah, like, totally.
You've got all of those moments for all of the characters. Like, it could have just been about the kids, but you introduce this janitor character that then has this conversation with him as they're drinking beer, kind of in the basement of, you know, of the high school. And it was really, the story saw itself all the way through, and you saw the evolution of these characters. So at the very end, when Judd Nelson is walking and it freeze frames on him,
I love that. Yeah.
This, you know, and he's got like the stud in his ear.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my, you know, when they're walking out the door to get back into their parents' cars, and all of a sudden Anthony Michael Hall is not wearing the green sweatshirt anymore that he was wearing. So everybody's kind of more connected, and they're cooler, and they're more confident, and you can read that.
Yeah.
That was crafted in the script, and it was crafted in the way that was directed, and it was put together. I noticed as a director and as a creative and as editing and doing all the stuff that I've done, like, I really pay attention to the editing and the post-production of things. And there was such a great way in that film of, he would keep the camera on people that he wanted you to be watching, and then cut to everybody else to get their reactions.
I noticed
of what
that
was
yesterday
going.
Too. Yeah.
So the camera would stay on somebody for, it doesn't happen anymore. It's like, if somebody has a speech, it's cutting between everybody.
Right,
gets
to
that, you know, that one of Emilio Estevez, when he's telling the story and the camera is dollying around, and it's, you've got, it's dollying behind other characters, behind pillars, and it never like jumps to another cut. It's literally just one steady. So he's talking and he's getting to an emotional thing, and then all of a sudden it's like gray as you're passing a pillar, and then it comes out. And then you kind of just see him through the crack of the neck, you know, through whichever character he's shooting through, whether it was Molly or Judd Nelson or whoever. And it was so refreshing to watch, because we now live in an age where things are edited to death.
Oh, my God.
And it's like they're quick cuts of this and this and, you know, and it's moving everywhere. And that was, for the most part, it played in these kind of wide.
And the thing that's wild to me about this movie is that it's basically all one location.
It's all one location.
Like, they're
except for the hallways.
Yeah, but it's the one
and
location.
And the parking lot out front.
But basically, the whole movie is in that library.
In the library, yeah.
Which is like, if you probably pitched that to someone today and you were like, we're basically going to stay in the library the whole movie, we'll go to different parts of the library. Like, I'm sure a network executive would be like, fuck no. We need to go to the gym.
It's way less expensive to shoot.
You have one
location.
Yeah. But I mean, like, but the performances were so good that it didn't matter that we were in one location.
It didn't.
Now, I think it's interesting is, like, you were on 90210.
Yeah.
And there is, and I do know that from Chuck Rosen, the executive producer of 90210, that when Darren Star made 90210, that Breakfast Club was one of the inspirations.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was movies of that time period of this new generation.
Yeah.
And so you were kind of like
Anthony Michael Hall
on 90210.
Yeah.
And
he was fantastic.
You're both so good.
I would never ever put myself at the same level as Anthony Michael Hall. Maybe after, you know, like 6 years in, but not in the beginning.
Okay. Okay, that's humble of you, but almost better.
David is almost better at times.
I'm sorry. That's
okay. We'll agree to disagree.
So just if you're on Instagram, please let us know which way.
No, Anthony Michael Hall was fantastic.
He is. What I love about his performance is he was very witty.
Oh my God, that
and
whole
very sarcastic and like.
I'm also in the science club, and I'm in the physics club. Brian, what are you rambling about over there? I was just talking about, I'm in, the math club, the science club, and the physics club. So what do you guys do in the physics club? We talk about physics, like properties of physics.
Principles, like at one point where he's like, and it's just a subtle little thing that Anthony Michael Hall does where he's like, I don't want anyone to move. And Anthony Michael Hall.
And he shifts back into his seat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will not move from these seats.
He was all those little subtleties. So that John Hughes, again, was really good at finding those. Like, instead of staying on the people that were on camera, he found the jewels of what people did.
In reactions.
And he made sure to be on those. And he didn't have a sense of, like, I've got to be on the actor when they're speaking, which I love. Like,
it's just interesting about 90210 and Breakfast Club in the sense that obviously Anthony Michael Hall has made a documentary. I don't know if you saw it about the Brat Pack.
No, I never saw that, but I heard about it.
And the struggles that some of them had after that, well, not even after the Breakfast Club, but just as being labeled as the Brat Pack.
Yeah.
And I think there might be some similarities with you all from 90210.
I'm sure.
Because you guys were doing the next evolution of the Breakfast Club. Right, like we did
10 years of the Breakfast Club.
I mean, where it was everything that we were dealing with every week, as opposed to in just one movie.
Right. Yeah.
When you watched back this movie, did you have any thoughts on that? Like, shit, like they were very similar. Like, we have very similar.
No, I didn't.
Because even the Judd Nelson character is kind of like, in a different way, the Dylan McKay character, right? The badass. Dylan is way different than Judd Nelson.
Sure, yeah. So the characters in The Breakfast Club, I genuinely feel were much more fleshed out and
toned.
And were so well created, and they all had their own space that they perfectly filled.
Sure.
Ali Sheedy's character could not have been more different from the other four that were in
there.
Emilio Estevez being the jock. He was the only jock that was in that room for the whole film.
Yeah.
Molly Ringwald's character was the only like princessy one of the room. So everybody had their place. I feel like, 90210 was a bit more of a watered down version of that. It lasted for a while, so I think people connected in a different way, and it felt more authentically high school and real world for people during that time. But I think what worked with The Breakfast Club was that it was the exaggeration of these characters. Like, Judd Nelson's is, like, I don't, that dude
I don't know,
was,
dude, do you know dudes like that?
No, I know dudes that have some of those traits.
Same.
But his character literally had all of them.
Yeah, right.
Emilio Estevez's character had all of the jock traits.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Anthony Michael Hall's, like Molly's character, Ali Sheedy's, they were fully encompassing that type, which is what made them, so separate.
I was going to say, what's interesting is like, that could be, if not done right and if the actors aren't right, it could be hokey.
It could totally be hokey, but when they all came together at the end, why it was so refreshing and you felt so connected to it because you were like, God, these people who literally you thought had nothing in common.
Have everything.
And I mean, that was apparent just by them unpacking their lunches.
Mm-hmm.
By Molly Ringwald taking out the sushi.
Yeah.
And, you know, Emilio taking out three sandwiches and a bag of chips and a thing of milk and a banana and an apple. Like he had the paper bag,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Ali Sheedy crunching the chips up with
that.
the sugar
yeah,
on the,
yeah.
You know, so it was, the characters were so distinct. It, to see them then come together was, that was just a call, that was, to me, that was a fantastic culmination. Like you get to the end and you feel like, God, that was so nice to see the journey of all these characters.
To me, the film gets to its, the best part of the film is after they get Judd's pot.
After they smoke weed.
Yeah. And they're all
sitting on the balcony
together. To me, that is the heart of the film. And it's interesting because I've watched that scene so many times as a kid and maybe at times didn't relate to each specific person, you know? Mm-hmm. But now when I look back at it, I'm like, I relate to all of them.
But it's
in different ways.
But it's because, I mean, I think, my opinion is that because you watched their journey in the beginning where they were so separate.
Yeah.
And it was so defined. They had carved out their niche so specifically that then when you see them all together on the balcony, it's like, oh my, I cannot believe that I'm now seeing this diverse group of people.
Yeah.
All get along, you know, and you've got that great conversation with Anthony Michael Hall where he's asking, hey, so when we see each other in the hallway on Monday, like what's going to happen? You know, and Molly's saying, like, this is, I'm most likely going to act like I don't know you because my friends won't accept
it. I mean, honestly, and like, I was the Anthony Michael Hall character probably in that era.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so,
so was I.
I remember being at a sleepover with a kid that I went to high school with, Fred Barberi. I
love that you still remember his
name.
Yeah,
and we had a very similar conversation. Fred was also like Anthony Michael Hall at the time,
mm-hmm.
and he, at that time, wanted to be friends with all those people. And so I remember when I remembered that watching the movie last night. That I remember the thing that I attached to so much when they were sitting in that thing mm-hmm. was it reminded me of my conversation with this kid Fred. But now when I think back on it and I look at it, I'm like, yeah, I guess there's a little bit of traits of people that I knew that had the Molly Ringwald situation
mm-hmm.
or the Judd situation that maybe I wasn't friends with them, so I would never have gone down that road of being like, oh, why
right.
is Judd such a dick sometimes to people,
right?
Right?
Yeah,
and I never would have ever gotten along with Emilio Estevez's character, the Judd.
Right. Oh yeah.
Which is
no.
too, it's
he
just
never
too,
would have given you the time of day.
When they start doing that fucking explosive dance.
The dance, and he's high, and then he yells, and yeah,
out.
It blows the wind. Yeah.
I'm like, I don't even know what's happening.
The crazy like jock dance where he's like punching the air and like yeah.
That was one thing where I was like,
he's
this
doing
is
all the
so
like footloose moves.
Fucking 80s. Like I don't even know what it is, and like I was of that era, and I don't know what it means.
Right.
Like. I've never experienced someone doing that.
Right.
But I do love like the iconic dance stuff.
Totally. Dude, Molly Ringwald doing the white man's overbite on like the top of the stair, the landing right there.
And then Judd and, you know, like I.
That one, like, I, and it did the close up on her feet and everything. I was
like
oh my
women
God.
Women don't have that in movies anymore. A montage-y sequence.
That was,
of,
so again, though, that was, to me, that was a really amazing example of how well that was written and directed, because even in the dance montage, the characters were still so fleshed out. You had Judd Nelson sitting on the top of the statue, headbanging. You had Emilio Estevez doing the crazy jock dance around the top. You had Molly Ringwald doing the, you know, the white girls over. You had Ali Sheedy doing whatever she was doing, like the, you know, it was so still those characters and those people. It wasn't like, okay, we're all gonna do a dance montage and then they were all figuring out like fun dance moves to
no.
do together and things like that.
Wait.
They did a couple, they did the thing up on the balcony.
I love
and,
that,
you know.
Yeah.
So you slowly see them coming together a little bit, which then that dissolves into them all sitting on the balcony, and you go, I've watched the transformation of them being in their own spaces and doing their own thing to finding a commonality with the music and with the marijuana that they were smoking. Yes. And then becoming this unit where it's like, hey, we're all in this crazy situation together. And then the culmination of them all saying to Anthony Michael Hall, can you write the paper?
Yeah.
Was...
I know. exactly.
That was perfect to me.
I mean, like you said, back to your point, like about what the writing was, like what John Hughes was able to do with the writing of that. Like, I mean, and what's amazing, I've seen things about John Hughes, is that he would pretty much write these in a few days.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't something like where he...
He'd just get inspired and he would like sit down and just bang it out.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see something that he came up with, and probably his own experiences of these different characters in high school. But it's interesting, the wardrobe was all really, really great. Like, I buy that Molly Ringwald's the princess. I buy that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, it's, the school is great. The school is shot, you know what I mean? Like, it looks like a believable school, you know? And it was also
Was that a set? I don't know.
I think it might be a real school. Yeah.
It's... Because it was incredibly well made. Like, they're hanging off of railings and doing stuff. It's like, okay, that was either really well built and constructed for the purpose of holding weight.
You guys shot at Torrance High, right?
We shot, when we first started, we shot everything at Torrance High.
And then they eventually built the set to replicate Torrance.
They built the hallway with the radio station, with the music booth, with the lockers, with the stuff.
Well, when you were shooting at Torrance High...
There was none of that.
But there was real kids.
Oh, yeah. So we would... real kids would be in classrooms when we would be shooting outside.
Yeah.
And then the bell would ring, and it would be, like, time for kids to walk from this class to this one, and they would all congregate on the balconies watching us. Mm. So everyone that you saw on camera, that was all background. Like, that was all filled in by production. There was not one person that was in the background that was just went to school. There.
It's interesting though, because like, did it become a juggernaut at some point of your show where they were like, we have to, like, you know, where it was clashing?
I think that's why we ended up building the set. I think it got to the point where it was like, Torrance High School it's no longer conducive of us being able to shoot, because our days have gotten so short.
Yeah.
Because every time they're between class, they're on lunch, but like, it gives us this short window of time to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed more freedom to do that. So,
I wonder if during this movie, I would love to find that fact out. If anyone knows on Instagram, like, were they shooting it? Was it a closed set? Like, was it? Because I think it's a real school. Yeah.
Seems like it.
Yeah, for sure. I just, you know, I love this movie.
I loved this movie. Like, it was the nostalgia for me sitting back and watching it. Again, I finished it again this morning. I watched it before this, and then I was like, I want to watch that again, because I really want to, like, be aware of and be able to reflect on these little things. And there are so many nuances in the film. I didn't want to like forget any of those or not remember them or be reaching for any of them.
What did you eat when you were watching the movie?
I didn't eat any.
I ate Doritos.
Did you?
Because that's always the thing when I was a kid, like Doritos and a Coke. And I was like, I'm going to just...
Doritos are terrible for you, buddy. Okay. You know that, right?
Okay. And also, I have to
say... It's a whole different conversation.
I feel like they've changed the Doritos makeup. There's something different about...
Made it worse or better?
Oh, better in your mind, like where it's healthier. Something is different about a Dorito now.
Hmm.
And I was like, this is... Because I was going for the nostalgic Coke and a Dorito watching The Breakfast Club. Something maybe I would have done... all those years ago.
Yeah.
And then I was like...
Except on your, like, flat screen LED with a Sonos sound bar and, like...
Okay. Val.
Totally.
So there's something definitely different about Doritos.
Right.
Just a point
that
I wanted, that I wanted
so
to
we'll,
be...
So, yeah, we'll do a whole different Doritos.
Well, just if anybody has any information about that...
Right. Hit us up.
Did something change?
So, Sharna, my fiancé, she has this app. I forget the name of it, where you can actually scan a barcode and it gives you all the dietary information on things. And then it gives you a score. Like, she'll walk through the grocery store and she'll go, ooh, ramen noodles. And she'll scan it.
Oh, I would hate.
And it's like, oh, it's only like 5 of 100, like the score of it. Doritos were like a 2.
Oh, 100. Shit. I figured it was going to be like that. Yeah.
Or, mm-hmm. No. Doritos were a 0 of 100.
Oh, worse.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Doritos Doritos are literally like the worst thing you can be putting
and
in your body.
And I assumed that they improved it, so definitely
no,
not.
But now now with Kennedy in there, I think, you know, they'll be forced to improve figs.
Right. I love Ally Sheedy too.
Oh, she's so good.
Because that character is someone who I would have been friends with.
She had very minimal dialogue through it.
And
until
there's
the
like at some points where she's like almost a mute or she's like mute. She's making a weird voice, you know.
She's doing like facial expressions and she's listening. And she's
but I would totally have been all into that. Oh, she was like awesome. that. The one thing that people noted on Instagram is what they are offended by Ally Sheedy or is that. They don't think a character, it's a valid point, they don't think a character like Ally Sheedy would have let Molly Ringwald put on the makeup and all that stuff and then present herself, because usually characters like that were anti all of
that. For sure.
And so people have noted, like, she kind of, well, not Ally Sheedy, but the character was, sells out.
So the character was interesting because you get kind of the same effect from when they're all on the balcony and she says, you want to know what I did to get in here? Nothing. I just had nothing better to do.
Yeah, I love that.
Remember
I love that
line?
I love that, yeah.
You realize, like, oh, she is just starving for... And she talked about it with her parents. Like, her parents, you know, don't give her any attention. So she literally goes there on Saturdays just to get attention. So then in... doing the makeup and the things, that's another way of getting attention. So
sure,
it's
okay.
It's a very, because...
That's valid.
Because she's not, her character is not emo and not against the system, and not, she's a loner.
Yes.
All that, like, dumps out her purse on the thing for everybody to see her problems come out, so then people will want to ask her about it and talk to her about it. Like, that was the whole... So she was a very layered and complicated character.
And I kind of love that she could pull off both the darker character, and then also look super beautiful when she lets Molly Ringwald make
and
her
that,
up.
And that moment, her subtle moments were so good. The moment when Emilio Estevez says, what happened, after she's all done up, and it's just the two of them together, and she's like, why, what do you mean? Claire did it, and then she just kind of looks away,
mm-hmm.
and then looks back to him to see like what his next reaction is going to be. It was so subtle and so well done. Like, you really saw the humanity of that character, which is, I think sometimes in current television and film, that's lost a bit because people are trying to be so edgy with dialogue and things, and they're trying to be so shocking. And it's like, oh my God, did you see what they did? And did you hear what they said? And all of that. And her character was this shocking physically to see this character, like when she's scratching her head over the thing and you see the snow coming down and she's like smiling, but then so honest and real, like you... Well, even if that wasn't you still connected with that feeling of loneliness and wanting to fit in and all of that.
As big as the characters were, they were all grounded in like this authenticity, right?
Yeah, super authentic.
Like, I felt when I watched Molly Ringwald being the princess, I was like, oh my God, she's totally that. And, well, and also I'm obsessed with her. Like, that was my thought when I was watching it. But
you know who Ally Sheedy reminded me of? Kathleen Robertson.
A little bit. Yes, I was thinking about that.
I was watching and I was like, you know, because Kathleen was always really great at the subtleties of things also. So she was like, in the beginning, you know, Claire seemed a little kind of like goth and out there and different.
Yeah.
And because her dad was the principal.
Yeah, right.
Like, she was very kind of against the system and bucking it all she seemed like the darker version of any of the other characters that we had on the show. Like, everybody else
sure.
was much more... But she, Ally Sheedy and Kathleen reminded me a lot of each other
totally.
Watching the film.
I agree. And there's aspects of Molly that remind me of Kathleen Robertson as well. You know what I mean? It's interesting. And so actually it was weird because this morning I was talking to Chip Johannesson, who's a writer from 90210, yeah. And I was so taken by the movie yesterday of like Claire Arnold, the character from 90210, and like Ally Sheedy, what you just said. Or also, did they pull Claire's name from Molly Ringwald? Like I went on this trip, so I texted or emailed Chip Johannesson, yeah. And he was like, no. It doesn't even like
it. It was just random.
No. It was, if anything, it was Claire Danes from My So-Called Life.
Really?
That's kind of where the origins of Claire's, they think Claire's name came from. And I can see that.
Wait, but did her character come onto the show before My So-Called Life was on television?
It all is happening around the same time.
But Claire came in
94.
When we had just gotten into college.
Yes.
Right?
And My
so he was the dean. So her dad was the dean of the school.
Yes. So they, I think he was like, My So-Called Life was either canceled or coming out around the time that Kathleen was going to be on 90210. Not to make this episode of The Breakfast Club all about Kathleen Robertson.
Right. Totally. Although we have.
Which I can do very quickly.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Once you send me down that road. Yeah.
Kathleen, you were fantastic on the show.
She's amazing.
Enough talk of Kathleen.
For right now, yeah.
right. Until later.
Yeah.
So I had this dream that was crazy. Kathleen was in it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
We were searching for aliens.
That sounds like every night. Oh, what? Oh my God! I've had that dream, but that really happened on 90210. Right. Yeah.
There you go.
I want to say that Judd Nelson makes this movie.
He's fantastic.
There is no movie without. Well, two people, Judd Nelson and the principal. Like, initially, the what's so brilliant about it is the complexity between Judd Nelson and the principal takes
they,
over the whole
they
beginning.
They know each other.
They take over the whole beginning.
They have
beginning
a history,
of the,
which
of
is
the
really
movie.
Cool. Like, they're,
you
they're
want another
the only
one?
Two, they're the only two characters in the whole thing that have a history.
Yeah.
All the rest of them, it's their first time kind of meeting and being around each other. But
yes.
He and the principal, you
they've
know, for 2 months I've got you. And they've been playing this game,
every week, you assume,
for a long time. So then when he's walking down the hallway at the end and he says to the janitor, he says, you know, see you next Saturday. Like, there's a familiarity between them. It was great.
I mean,
but
those two,
the dynamic was
take
fantastic.
Take over the whole movie in the beginning part in a good way where... all the other characters are sort of reacting to this because this is all new. Like Molly Ringwald telling him, stop, like you're going to get another week. And Judd said, yes, like he wants another week.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's interesting because it's a lot of hijinks at first. I love when the principal puts the fucking the chair by the door.
The door's way too heavy, sir.
And it slams closed. And then they pull the magazine stand, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, well, that's a fire risk. And then all of a sudden the principal's like, what are you stupid? Get that out of the door. You know,
I love all that. And I rewound it. I rewound that part of like the chair flying and the noise that
he
makes great noises. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Just an old school guy
that
like, you don't see anymore.
Yeah.
And then so it warms you into it. And the humor of all of that, like, has you totally invested. So when they're up there in the library having real talk about their parents and stuff like that, and like the shit that I now think back about, you know what I mean? Like in my life growing up, you're like, oh, I needed all that to get here.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like the story, the story takes you, it was so well, again, like just well developed and well thought through. It took you on the full ride from like the kids getting there in the morning, not knowing each other, the silence of sitting in chairs, kind of in your own thing, speaking, but not really wanting to speak. And everybody kind of afraid of, you know, how they were going to be perceived by everybody else there, to then ending up as this like unit and calling themselves then the Breakfast Club. Like, it was just such a great evolution of characters. And it was such a great ride to go on.
You do another podcast, Oldish. Right?
I do what?
Another show called Oldish.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of it is what our generation dealt with and
who we are now.
Who we are now.
Right.
When you get to that conversation in the Breakfast Club, in the upstairs, and everyone's talking about the way that their parents treat them or ignore them or all their different, all the different, push them.
Yeah.
The one character, you know, had a gun, you know, because he was being ridden.
A flare gun
because of the
so
studying.
Great.
And then the athlete, you know.
That moment, though, I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. Like, so it's like all of that kind of stuff is very complex. And I looked at it from a different lens when I was watching that. And I was like, this is the kind of stuff we're talking about now, but the characters were talking about then. Like, they were emotionally aware of the things that were happening in their lives. And this is something that you guys...
So I think the difference now is that those kids are now parents. So we've learned from that experience, that generation, that type of parenting, and we've come into this aspect of it. And yeah, it's... Not everybody does it well. There are definitely people that are too gentle in parenting.
Sure.
And you see their kids and you're around them and you're like, God, that is just a tough
kid. Just had the vision of Judd Nelson's kids. Not Judd Nelson, but the character.
The characters.
That, Bender's kids.
Yeah.
What that must be. Like, who knows what they've shaped into or have.
I would assume that they were, because he came out of there with a different understanding of
sure.
life and how to handle himself.
This is why a 90210 reboot is so important, and I always try to express this to you, because what you're doing with Oldish could mm-hmm. be done on a show that we all watched. Like, not a 90210 reboot. I love the one that you guys did, but the ones where you're the parents.
Right.
There's no way this is.
I don't know how I would feel about that.
I'm trying any which way to.
I don't.
It.
I was the kid on that show for 10 years.
Yeah, but like to see David and Donna's kids and how they're managing. The complexities and
right.
the ways that they, things that maybe that they can look back on and be, oh, that was really fucked up, what David said, or the way Dylan, you know, is
right.
dealing with the, you know, one, Dylan's gone, right?
Right? Yeah.
And so it's like the loss of that friend through and Brenda through their characters,
yeah.
like showing how people have grown up. I think it's a really, like, it's way more important of a reboot than you've ever thought about.
Because
the Breakfast Club isn't rebooting.
No, I don't think 90210 is rebooting them either.
It should.
We'll see.
Okay.
I think we agreed to disagree.
We'll see. It's the furthest
I've
ever gotten.
It's not the first time I've ever said that. I'm yeah. not that stubborn.
Okay.
Saying a hard, like, I never say never. I don't do a hard pass ever in life.
That's good.
But
it has to be
feel,
right.
I feel pretty confident it has to be right.
Yeah.
Because as of right now, I feel pretty confident in saying,
Dude, a lot of shit's getting rebooted now in a way that's like, why? Okay, I get that one, but why that one? All right, so on the Movie Act app, that's out of 5.
I give it a strong 4.5. Like I.
Oh my God, I'm giving it a 5.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So I'm giving it a 4.5 just because there are some of the references and issues with dialogue and
sure.
things like that.
Well, I mean,
like,
I wouldn't
suggest it for everyone because it could be offensive to people.
Okay, that's valid.
Understandably. But it's a really incredibly well-crafted movie, and I think it deserves no less than a 4.5.
I'm giving it a 5, and I'm overlooking the some of the things that you're talking about only because... It wasn't made today.
No,
it
for
was
sure.
made then, and my generation or our generation totally understands the core values of
sure.
what that was, and also the way we joked in that era is different than the way you might joke today. And so, I'm able to just like put that all aside for this particular one because
right.
I feel like the stuff that was happening up in the library and the conversations that they were having. Are so important for any, even today, a kid watching those particular scenes,
mm-hmm.
I think they can relate to a lot of what was being said up there. And I'm totally with you about the slurs and all
no,
that shit.
No, then I'll go 4.75. I feel a little pressured by you, but I'll go 4.75.
Okay, so I'm going 5. I think everyone should rank it, put it where they want, and weigh in. Yeah. Like, we're on Instagram, we're on social media.
Head on over and download the MovieAct app also. And yeah, watch it, review it, rate it, and share it with people, because I think it's a really fun watch. I really enjoyed revisiting that film. I look forward to the next one that we do, which we have no idea. We'll talk about it afterwards.
I can't wait to figure that out. I feel like we need a guest.
Yeah. So what we want to start doing is we want to start having a guest from the films or TV shows that we're talking about. Visit us on Zoom here on the iPad. We'll sit and talk to them. You guys get a chance then to sort of hear their take on it, what the experience was like making it, what the experience is like for them now watching it, if they have, or if they can't stand it and it was just like an absolute, like, scarlet letter on their life.
Mm-hmm.
You never know, you know?
I can't wait. The last thing I want to say about The Breakfast Club is John Hughes is in the movie, which totally I caught last night. Yeah. And I remember reading that.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing all the parents
dropping them off and picking
up. What's weird about that is, like, two things. After hearing all the different shit that the parents did to them,
yeah,
I was like, the casting of even those, they were basically the parents didn't have, some of them didn't have lines.
Right, know, yeah.
They're no, barely they're, in the movie. Right, yeah. But then you have, like, a totally different perspective of looking at each of those parents as they pull up. And then you see John Hughes's, and I wondered if John Hughes related the most to Anthony Michael Hall's character, because that's who he's the father of, and when he picks him up.
Who knows? Or he just related. Because
he feels like that was just that a character,
right?
You know what I mean?
Who knows? It's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this movie, and I can't wait to see what we're gonna do next week. This is Rewind,
dude, and we're back. Welcome back.
So
happy that you're healthy.
I'm good.
You're
man.
Happy.
Yeah. And thank you for all of that and everything you did, man. Like, just love you. So
love you too, man.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you
next
week.
Bye, everyone. See ya.